And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Keith Law. Welcome to episode 57 of The Keith Law Show. My guest today is Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline. We're going to do a lot of draft talk today. Get used to it. The draft is less than 3 months away. It's actually further away than it feels like it should be given where we are in the calendar, but that's because the draft is later this year. Anyway, there will be a lot of draft talk coming up. I'm also going to do a draft mailbag next Monday, so keep an eye out for a tweet Monday morning. I will ask folks to submit their questions. It could actually be mailbag. You can actually submit questions on anything, but we're kind of in draft mode now. It's also opening day for the minor leagues, so maybe we'll have some questions on that as well. For folks who subscribe to The Athletic, I've had a lot of columns up recently. I worked with my colleague Brett Garoli, who's been a guest on this podcast back in January. We wrote about the upcoming MLB Draft League and why the initial rosters have left a lot of front office executives and scouts disappointed. I also wrote a bit about the decision by Jeff Bradich to step down as the Colorado Rockies GM and what the franchise might do to try to get themselves back on the right track. Also, for folks who haven't already purchased it, thank you if you have, my second book, The Inside Game, Bad Calls, Strange Moves, and What Baseball Behavior Teaches Us About Ourselves, is now out in paperback. You can find it at many independent bookstores, on bookshop.org, or of course, on Amazon. And as I said, if you have purchased it already, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. Now it is my great pleasure to be joined by my longtime friend, Jim Callis. Jim is now a senior writer for MLB Pipeline. He's one of their draft experts there. You can find him and should follow him on Twitter at Jim Callis with two L's, MLB. Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm glad to, Keith. And it's funny, it's like I know I'm obviously getting older because we were talking off there about how all four of my kids are now adults, which is crazy. But have we known each? I think we've known each other for close to 20 years now.
Yeah, it's
like,
gotta be close
like pre
to that, right?
Blue Jays, like when you were BP. Yep. Were we in Tower Wars at one point together?
Yeah,
maybe?
That would make sense. I did that a couple
early
years.
2000s.
That's where I first met Jonathan Mayo, actually, in like 99 or so. 98 or 99, yeah.
The funny thing about Jonathan, who I obviously now work with, is I have no recollection of the first time I met him. He does. We met at the College World Series 1 year, and I've been to 30-something College World Series, and I honestly have no recollection of meeting him at the College World Series. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Right, you should totally big league him next time you see him. Like, have we met?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. He always gives me a hard time about that.
Yes, as he should, of course.
Yes.
So let's talk draft. You guys, your MLB Pipeline does great, great work. You've put out a couple of things recently. Let's start with your ranking. You've done Jonathan did a mock recently. Let's start. You guys ranked the top 150 prospects in the draft class. I obviously have my own shorter ranking. I've just ranked 50 so far.
We need 100 more, Keith.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, I mean, go with God on that one. The fact you have to find those guys in a year like this when we don't have summer and fall like we usually would have. I don't envy you the challenge. But of course, we have a lot of the same names up top. So let me start with the obvious one. I think the one a lot of listeners want to know. You have Jack Leiter at one. I have Jack Leiter at one. What went into putting him at one particularly over Kumar Rocker, his teammate at Vanderbilt, but also over Jordan Lawler, who you have at number two?
Yeah, and it's funny because we did that list. We kind of finalized it 2 weeks ago. And even a couple weeks before that, I did, our place, like a lot of places, you can't do enough Leiter Rocker coverage. Like, I think they're the most hyped, famous college baseball teammates ever. I don't even think it's close. Like Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer, obviously it's easier to hype guys now with all the social media. We're not hyped anywhere to near this extent. They were very good prospects, but Pitching Ninja, I don't think existed in 2011. No. Wasn't, doing all these overlays and everything. So it's totally different. But what's funny, so I'd say it was probably a month ago now, I did a Leiter versus Rocker, compare and contrast who's better, and talked to, scouting directors, assistant scouting directors, cross-checker, higher level guys. And it was 25-3 in favor of Leiter. Just a total landslide. Now, at the time, Leiter had, it was coming off the no-hitter against South Carolina and then 7 no-hit innings in his next start, and he had a really good third SEC start. And Rocker's velocity had been down. You know, he was kind of sitting 91, 92. And so it was landslide. And so then fast forward 2 weeks, we did our list. You know, Kumar was starting to bounce back, but like Kumar's stuff is really like gone back to where people expect it to be since we've done our list. So at the time, Leiter versus Rocker was kind of easy. I think in general, I do prefer Leiter because even though he doesn't throw as hard as Kumar, I mean, he just misses more bats in the zone by far with his fastball. He could throw his fastball by you in the zone at 93 miles an hour, whereas Kumar more gets you to chase his fastball at 96 up in the zone. Like if Kumar throws in the zone, even though he throws harder, I think he gets hit more than Jack Leiter's fastball. You know, Rocker's got a better breaking ball, though Leiter's got a pretty good curveball. I just think Leiter's got a better changeup. He's got a little bit more command and polish. You know, the interesting thing's going to be, and I wrote this at the time we did the comparison story, the biggest question for Leiter, who has gotten stronger and a little bit bigger in college, but he's listed at 6'1", 205 and Kumar 6'4", 255, is what's Leiter's stuff going to look like, you know, in the second half of the season once he's piled on some innings? Because he pitched, I think it was like 58 innings in high school 2 years ago and no summer ball. And then he pitched about 16 innings last year at Vanderbilt and no summer ball. And we've seen the last 2 weeks, he gave up 3 solo homers 2 weeks ago. He gave up 2 homers this last weekend against Mississippi State and lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that he's having a bad year, but his ERA has gone from like 0.5 to 1.5 in 2 weeks. And I think it's a lot closer than it is. You know, with Lawler, well, and I'll ask you this question. So I would be tempted to take one of the shortstops over one of the pitchers. With Lawler, it spooks me slightly that he was striking out at like a 20% clip against not real great high school competition, which kind of baffles people. Like it's not like he's got a glaring flaw in his swing or he's swinging from his heels, but I still believe in him. And, you know, I almost might be tempted to take Marcelo Mayer over any of them. I mean, I to me, they're all very close. If I were drafting today, again, just because Jack's gotten a hit a little bit the last couple weeks, and it makes me wonder exactly, you know, how is this stuff going to hold up a little bit more? I might lean Lawler, but like, I mean, have you sensed, Keith, when you've talked to teams, I don't think teams, this isn't one of those years where everybody's like, oh, it's clearly Jack Leiter. Now, a month ago, it was, I think, to a lot of teams, somewhat clearly Jack Leiter at the time, but with the caveat we have to see. But have you, I mean, are you getting from teams? I don't think any of this, I think there's so much to be decided yet.
I think there's two answers to that. Sort of what if teams have as their own pref lists, and what if people think Pittsburgh's going to do? Everyone thinks Pittsburgh's taking a college guy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily who that is. Like, I heard one guy, so I was pretty sure he was going to be Leiter. But of course, at that point, Rocker was, as you said, in that bit of a trough, right? How could you, at that point, if you had said, no, you should take Rocker.
When we both did our lists, when Jonathan and I did ours and you did yours.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like I said, when I did the head-to-head comparison, it was 25-3, which I mean, was extreme, but like, I mean, Jack was pitching so well and Rocker was, I mean, Leiter was pretty much throwing harder than Rocker for a couple of weeks too.
Absolutely. The other thing that I did hear, so after I saw Henry Davis a couple weekends ago at UVA, and he played out of his mind. He made 2 outs in 10 PA. And I just sort of threw out there like, why isn't he getting discussed higher? And I got all kinds of response. You know what it's like. You put something out there in the world and people say you're crazy, or people say, actually, I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
Right. And I got kind of all of that. And you guys have Davis at 7 on your ranking from a week ago. Where do you think he ends up going? This is different from sort of where he's ranked, but as a college catcher with performance and just knowing how teams are kind of generally high school averse up at the top levels of the draft, do you think he goes maybe, say, in the top 5, maybe even in a more exclusive area than that?
Yeah, I think he could. I mean, and what you're leading to, Keith, is right. Like, when you do your list and we do our list, we're lining them up based on how we perceive the talent to be. You know, we try to reflect the industry consensus to some degree. It's not, okay, this is how they're going to get drafted. And you're right. Catchers get pushed up the draft, you know, especially, you know, not so much in the first round if you're a high school catcher, but, you know, catchers get pushed up the draft. I mean, teams want to draft college bats at the top of the draft, and most of the best guys this year are having bad years. So there really aren't that many college bats to take. You know, I think The question with him is, well, there's two things. One, you know, how good of a catcher is he going to be? He's got great arm. Great mm-hmm. arm, you know, at least a 7 on the 2-8 scale, yep. but he's not a very good receiver. And, you know, on one hand you'll hear, oh, we're getting automated strike zone. It doesn't matter. I'm not talking about framing. I'm talking about receiving. Like he drops multiple. I don't know what you saw the weeks you saw him, Keith, but like the scouts I talked to, like he drops a lot of balls behind the plate. And even with automated strike zone, you're going to have to be able to catch the ball. You can't be dropping balls. So if you're all in, okay. And I think he probably winds up being a fringy to average catcher, which you live with because of the bat. But then the other dilemma to me is when you have a guy, like if you're going to take him at the top of the draft, like we put scouting grades on these and they're all, you can obviously debate a lot. We went 55 hit, 55 power. Let's say you go 6 hit, 6 power, which would be, I don't know, like a 280 hitter with 25 to 30 home runs. Mm-hmm. So you're all in on Henry Davis and you want him. Well, he's probably not going to hit 280 with 30 home runs if he's catching 100 games for you in a year, because he's going to be all beat up. It's going to take all. So you get into this kind of conundrum with these catchers who are really good, like kind of like with Tyler Soderstrom in last year's draft. If the guy's athletic enough to play another position and he's an okay catcher, but not a strong catcher, do you want to have like so-so defense and take away from the bat, or do you want to just maximize the bat? And so then if you're doing that with Henry Davis, you know, and you know, how high do you take him? So I think everybody's still trying to figure all that out. I mean, I personally, and I don't know about you, Keith, I would rather maximize the offense rather than take extra time to get the guy to the big leagues. You know, Austin Wells was a guy from last year's draft who's like that. You know, I mean, Davis throws really well. He runs fine, you know, felt below average, but good for a catcher. I think you could easily put him in the outfield and maybe even third base. And I would just do that and maximize his bat. But a long-winded answer. But again, I think right now, clearly, you know, I think he's ahead of like Sal Frelick and Kowser as the best college bat. And I think he's a better catcher than Del Castillo, who's not having, you know, the year that we thought he was going to have, the Miami catcher. So, I mean, if Henry Davis wound up going number one, it would not blow me away.
If Pittsburgh were to do that, conceivably, they would save a little money relative to what it would cost to take Leiter or Rocker, I guess Lawler, even though that's not likely to happen. And then they pick again at the top of the next round, and they could potentially do something where there's some interesting high school pitching out there. I don't think the top of the high school pitching board is that great, which kind of leads into my next question. But I think there's plenty of depth in high school right-handers. You guys had Jackson Job at 6 overall. In the last 2 years, we have not seen a high school pitcher go in the top 15 of right. the first round. I think it was 16 last year and maybe 17 or 18 the year
before. I think
before.
It was might have been 15 and 18, but yeah.
Maybe 15 and 18. Okay, yes. So right around there. Do you think, and again, I know your ranking is a ranking.
Yeah.
That's where you think he belongs on merit, regardless of where he's taken. Do you think that, a two-part question, do you think that that was the beginning of any sort of trend of teams steering away from high school pitching? And do you think Job is better than, say, Mick Abel, who was the first high school pitcher taken last year, or Quinn Priester, first high school pitcher taken 2 years ago, both of whom have looked very good so far in limited time in Pro Bowl?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a trend. I mean, I think teams, like, for years have been a little skittish about high school right-handers in general, just because, I mean, there's more injury risk with a high school pitcher. I mean, it seems like all pitchers get hurt, but like the high school pitchers are young. Typically, the high school pitchers who are the most attractive throw really hard. And we keep seeing like Hunter Green, who super athletic, clean arm action, throws 100 easier than any high school pitcher ever. And he blew out real quick. Like I'm not a doctor, but I just don't think arms are built to throw as hard as they do on a consistent basis. And when you have young guys throwing hard, they tend to blow out. But those are the guys we get all excited about. So I don't know if it's a trend. I do think Job is more highly regarded than those guys were, Priester and Abel. If you asked me, because we have him ranked 6, so if that was the over-under on where he goes in the draft, I would definitely take the under, because I would err that he wouldn't go as high as Ryan. I don't think the top high school pitcher ever goes as high as you. Like, we had Abel. I didn't know we had Abel higher than 15, like maybe 12 or 13 last year. And I know we had Matt Allen, who's also looked good, but slid till the third round, ranked 11th, and Priester went 18th 2 years ago. But Job, if you want to make an argument, I'm not saying he'll go ahead of Kumar Rocker, because I don't think he will. But if you want to stack him up against Kumar Rocker, you can make the argument that he throws maybe a tick or two less velocity, but the fastball plays just as well or better than Kumar's. Everybody talks about, you know, Kumar's wipeout slider, which for the most part is, I mean, we're nitpicking here, is a chase pitch. Jobe's got a wipeout slider too. It's a low 80s pitch. The spin rates are over 3,000. It's got two plane depth. I think he commands his slider better than Kumar's. He's got a better changeup than Kumar. He's really upgraded his changeup this spring, and he's actually throwing it to show scouts he has it when he doesn't need to. I think his control's as good as Kumar's. He's not as physical, but he's super athletic. I mean, this guy's a prospect, not nearly as much as he is as a pitcher, but he's a prospect as a shortstop. You could argue if you were just grading out the various categories that you can make a case for Jobe over Rocker, although I don't think there's any chance Jobe would get drafted ahead of Rocker.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with everything you just said. I actually would say I haven't seen Jobe in person based on what I've heard and video, and I did see Kumar Rocker in person in high school. I think Jobe is ahead of where Rocker was at the same age, right? Rocker is a high school senior versus Jobe is a high school senior. Jobe, I think, has better stuff and probably a little bit better, maybe better control. I'm always wary on high school command because it's just such a nebulous thing.
Who are you facing?
Right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yesterday I saw a kid in North Jersey who pitched great. A kid named Sean Hard. It was great. It was totally worth the trip. But it was like, those were high school strikes. Like, let's be honest. It was great. Good for him. If he wants the money, I think he's going to get paid. But those were definitely high school strikes. That's high school control that is not necessarily double A control. They're two very different things.
Well, in high school, if you throw 90, which is a below average fastball now, but if you throw 90, just throw it down the middle, how many guys are really going to even be able to hit it? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have to worry about it.
Most of the opposing hitters were shorter than I am. So
yeah. It was so there,
like,
you go.
Yeah. It's the level of competition does matter. Let me throw a couple wild cards at you too, and feel free to add some of your own. We have the same kinds of conversations. We talk to probably some of the same people too. And the two college pitchers whose names come up as in sort of, what do we do with them? Sam Bachman, who's been electric, but missed a couple starts with some kind of sore, but not serious, shoulder.
Yeah.
And he just threw seven innings the other day, so he seems to be fine. And Ryan Cusick, who might have the best pure arm of all the starters in the college starters in the draft, but limited track record, guys have delivery questions, guys have command questions. Where do you think they end up falling in terms of a general range? Because I think if you're just going stuff, if you ignored everything else, they go in the top 10 pretty easily. But that's probably not how it's going to play out.
I think I'd say, like, if you told me, like, I think when Jonathan did our first full mock, we kind of alternate, and he did the first one. He had Cusick going 10 to the Mets. I mean, I kind of feel like 10 would be the upper end. Like, because as we both know, it only takes one team. If there's a team that's all in on a guy, it doesn't matter what the consensus is. But I feel like they probably go more 15 to 25. I mean, you know, I've had scouts have seen Bachman hit 101 with a top of the scale slider at his best. Like you said, like I think the official word is, you know, not a severe problem, but he wasn't recovering as well as they liked. So they gave him a couple weeks off, but the stuff's been great since he came back. But he's 6'1" and he's kind of slingy and people don't love the delivery. So, like, even though he's got, I mean, just, you know, nasty, nasty stuff, you know, that works against him a little bit. And to be fair, you know, I think guys like him who come from a smaller conference are hurt by not having a Cape League last year. You know, I use the example of Nick Gonzalez going seventh to the Pirates last year. And Nick Gonzalez led the NCAA in hitting as a sophomore. He led him in home runs during the shortened season last year. But he was playing at New Mexico State, which is a launching pad, and the ball flies. And he doesn't go seventh if he doesn't go to the Cape and win the MVP award to be one of the best hitters in the league with wood bats. And the Sam Bachmans and everybody else didn't get to go to the Cape last summer. Like, I think if Sam Bachman had gone to the Cape and shown this kind of stuff and dominated there, Sam Bachman would probably be being talked about as a top five, top 10 pick.
Imagine if he'd gone there and closed. Like, remember, I'm dating myself, but you'll remember, Brandon Morrow was a closer on the Cape and was hitting 100, maybe 99 or 100. He ended up going the top, then went back to Cal, started, ended up going the top 10.
Yeah.
Like, Bachman's that kind of guy.
You'd feel comfortable like that. And then, you know, Cusick, I mean, he throws hard. I've had guys who've seen him up to 102. You know, the key for him this spring has been he never had great feel for spin in the past. He's come up with a solid curveball that shows flashes of being a plus pitch. It's not consistent strikes. It's not high effort delivery, but you know, it's 6'6", 235, big body. I think you could say reliever risk on anyone if you, you know, if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Just like you could say, oh, I think that guy's going to blow out, and you're going to be right more often than not. Right. But you know, I just think you guys like Gunnar Hoglund of Ole Miss, who missed a start this weekend, and Ty Madden at Texas are a little bit more polished. So I think they go behind them. But I'd say that 15 to 25 range. Although again, if those guys go in the top 10, like this draft's still very wide open just because of all the uncertainty coming off the pandemic year and the fact that we have an extra month before we have the draft in July instead of June.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I think one of the other variables there is the staggering of the high school schedules. I was just talking to someone earlier today who said, oh, the shortstop in North Carolina is really coming on. That's Khalil Watson. You guys have ranked at 11. I think I had him ranked right about at the same range, actually. But he hadn't played a game before either of us put out our rankings, which because North Carolina pushed everything back. I think I'm looking at the data. I think yesterday, day before we record this, was actually his first official game. He played scrimmages and they've been practicing.
Yeah, they might have done some scrimmages. But yeah, and I want to say, I think North Carolina has compressed their season to like 2 games a week for 7 or 8 weeks. It's a very compressed schedule. You know, if you're a private school or you're playing at like one of those baseball academies, you know, you could play. But yeah, it's been, even Marcelo Mayer, I think he's only been playing for about a month and he's in California. I mean, you know, when does that happen where California is one of the last states to start high school baseball?
Right. Yeah. It's been, I feel like that is also, even though as I talked to guys earlier today, it was, oh, this team's on this player, this team's on the Brady House's name's coming up a lot now in the top 10. I mean, we knew he might go in the top 10, and now it seems like, well, if the draft were today, he would definitely go in the top 10. Okay, great. But also I'm looking at the calendar and like, we still got 2.5 months left and Watson's barely started and I can never, Josh Hartle's at the kid over towards.
And Hartle had an appendectomy, I think. So I don't know if he's pitching yet.
I don't think he's pitched.
Yeah.
I don't think he's pitched in a game yet. And so he should at some point be able to. I mean, it's better for him.
Yeah.
But still, it's so hard to calibrate. We're at a point in the calendar where in previous years, you and I would be hearing a lot of dope, basically, on this team's on this player. And now it's this year, it's like, well, we can have that dope. But at the same time, a bunch of these guys have just gotten started.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, in a normal year, we'd be like 6 weeks from the draft.
Right.
You know, like there's high school, like I think Florida's kind of on a normal schedule. So Florida would be kind of wrapping up. I think Arizona's kind of wrapping up.
Alabama's done.
Yeah.
I think they finish this week, maybe.
Yeah. A lot of that stuff, and you'd be at the point where, like, I'll do my first mock, not this week, but next week, because Jonathan just did our last one, or my first full mock. And it's still too early to say this team's on that. Like you said, like maybe at the top you can hear some rumblings, but nobody knows yet. Like even if we got Ben Charrington on here and administered him truth serum and he had to tell us the truth, I don't think they have any clue who they prefer right now. Like, it's evolving, it's in nowhere, clear decision. Like we're talking about with Leiter versus Rocker a month ago, it was a landslide in favor of Leiter. In the last 2 weeks, Rocker's outpitched him. So, yeah. I mean, this stuff's going to change. And the one thing I do wonder about, and we'll see, like I was talking a little bit about this with Jack Leiter. So many college pitchers barely pitched last year. So, some pitched summer ball, but it was sporadic. Are we going to have a bunch of college pitchers hit the wall at 75 innings in May, and all of a sudden guys are going to tired arms and miss time, or guys are going to be down 3-4 miles an hour? I mean, you see that in a normal college year anyway, because these are younger guys. They're not all, you know, physically strapped, and so you may have guys worn out by early May, and then all of a sudden everybody's, you know, teeing off on all these pitchers who everybody liked.
Well, what if that's what happened to Rocker, right? Because he bounced back. He's fine. It looks like he's fine. I sort of speculated at the time it could just be some midseason fatigue that we're not used to because we have no precedent for this. And that could happen.
He didn't pitch summer ball last year.
Right? What if that happened to Bachman? Bachman's completely free. You know, we don't really know until close to the draft. But that could absolutely be what it is. And I'm trying to keep that in my own mind, too, to be more forgiving. Whereas normally you'd be like, oh, he missed two starts with a shoulder something. That's terrible. We should be very – no, actually, this year it could be terrible. Obviously, it could always be terrible. But it could be fine. And we should be more open-minded about that because no draft class has gone through what this draft class, and thinking specifically of the college pitchers, has gone through in terms of barely – what was it? 4 weekends last year, most of them not pitching the rest of the year. And now, oh, by the way, kids, go out and make 13 starts again this year.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's funny too because even though he didn't suffer – he suffered from the pandemic because the season got canceled. I just look back last year at Garrett Crochet, Keith, and we had Garrett Crochet – like 6th or 7th on our list coming into the season. Mm-hmm. You know, it still felt weird, but everybody's just raving. This guy looked unbelievable in fall practice. And like, of course it's fall practice, but he's just carving guys up and throwing great. The stuff we saw in the big leagues, he was doing in fall practice. And he came out and he had, I think it was like a, I don't know if it was a lat or upper back or shoulder.
Yeah, they said a back injury, but I think.
You even heard different terminology depending on your turn to, but yes. I honestly think that what happened was, it was minor, and Tennessee was going to have its best team in a long time. Tony Vitello's mm-hmm. done a nice job rebounding the program, and I think they just looked at it like, you know what? Rather than have him come out here, and he's not 100% and pitch against our non-conference schedule, let's get him ready for the SEC. And in a normal year, that would have been the story. He would have pitched, you know, assuming he showed the stuff he did in the big leagues, he would have destroyed the SEC, and Garrett Crochet would have been a top 5 pick. You know, maybe even higher than that. But because he only pitched once before the pandemic came, boom, and I think teams discounted him, same type of thing, different circumstances. But like, hey, we didn't get, you know, what was going on with his shoulder? We only got to see one. And I don't even think a lot of guys got to see his only game last spring because I think he threw midweek right before the pandemic.
Unscheduled relief appearance.
I think they almost got him in because the pandemic was coming and we were starting to get word that things might get shut down, and they threw him out there so he could get a game in. But it's the same type of thing. You can't, you like you said, you don't want to read too much into a situation and walk away from a pretty talented guy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Where do you think Judd Fabian ends up? He was in your preseason top 10. I did not do a preseason ranking. They played a little bit. By the time I did my first ranking, he wasn't on my top 30 at that point. And a lot of Florida fans especially were like, well, why isn't Judd Fabian on there? But he hasn't been very good. And I'm not really sure what to make of him, or if there's a point where he says, I'm going to do it. Does he go back to school and just try to have a better season next year?
It's tough because, you know, he's younger than your typical junior because he graduated early. His freshman year would have been his senior year in high school if he hadn't graduated early. So he won't be 21 until late September. So he'd be more in position to do that. And yeah, you know, it's tough because he's not having a good year. I mean, now that said, he's played better, a lot better in the last, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. He went through a stretch like where he kind of bottomed out, and I'm looking at this. He struck out 16 times in a 5-game span. His strikeout rate was up at 40%. And I remember a couple of years ago, I really liked Jaron Kendall, Keith. I really liked mm-hmm. Jaron Kendall at Vanderbilt. Best athlete in the draft. Yep. And people were like, you know what? His strikeout rate was like 23 or 24%. That was concerning. And my attitude was, you know what? He might strike out, but maybe he's like a Mike Cameron, low average, but power, speed, defense, good player. Dodgers got him. I thought it was a steal. And he's been terrible in pro ball.
Yes, he has. That was,
people were a little afraid because he had people were concerned he had a 24% strikeout rate. Judd Fabian was at 40% like after the first couple games in April. And so I kind of talked myself into 24%, like, yeah, you know, that's okay. You can't talk yourself into, You can't talk yourself into 40%. Now, that said, and again, I'm being selective here, trying to make a case for Jed Fabian.
Yeah, of course.
I think he struck out 9 times his last 14 games, which is much more palatable. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the math in my head here. It looks like the strikeout rate is down around 30%. So like he's playing, but it's still like more than 23 or 24%. And, you know, he's never really hit for average at Florida. I mean, he does have 14 home runs now. I mean, he's heating up with home runs. You know, he hit well in the Cape 2 years ago. And so people remember that. I think Keith, again, I mean, it's so weird. And when I have conversations with people, the old chestnut, if the draft were today, is so goofy because we have so much less history and the draft's further away than usual. I think if the draft were today, or well, I'll say it this way, by the time the draft comes around, assuming that he's righted the ship, he's not tearing up, he's hitting home runs, he's not striking out every third at bat, I bet he goes in the first round somewhere because he's got tools. I mean, he's on pace to have this crazy year where, I mean, he's going to hit, you know, about 25 homers and strike out 100 times
right.
in college, which is crazy. So I think, you know, in the end, I mean, the bat's going to be a concern, but he's going to show you everything else. And I don't think he's going to go at the top of the draft, but I bet he, like, if I had to guess today, I'd say in the 20s. How about you? He's a tough one, though.
He is a tough one. Trust me, that's why I asked you. And that's why I let you go first.
Well, you tell me where you think he's going, then I'll give you another one.
I've had guys say they think he goes back to school next year. I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think he's going to be, you know, there's a chance he could go back and be much better and make a lot more money. But given what's been wrong with him in terms of his approach, I think he's not going to be that inclined to go back to school. And two, I think given the tools, the evident power, someone will take a shot at him. My prediction a week or two ago, just to a friend on the phone, to a scout friend, was he's someone's second pick. Someone gets
like
him
Cameron
in the comp
Meisner
round. That was exactly the comp that I made. And, you know, Christian Franklin to me is a little bit of a similar player where Franklin's, you know, it's also pretty toolsy, a little more on defense, but he also kind of strikes out a lot. And like,
yeah.
There's Isaiah Thomas at Vanderbilt where the profile is different, but at the end of the day, these are all guys who strike out a lot
and
have really good
that.
Tools. Right, and they're striking out a lot, especially in the SEC. When you're striking out a lot in conference, in theory, that's the best competition you're facing. Certainly, if you play in the SEC, it is. But there's a place for all of those guys. I don't know exactly where, and those guys aren't necessarily all going to go bang, bang, bang. But to me, they are like the Cam Meisner all-stars of this year, where they're not non-prospects. It's just that's that one thing, that one variable that you talked about, the strikeout rate, is so significant in the minds of, I would say, both scouts and analysts, that it is going to push some of those guys down the board. And maybe one of them goes in the 20s. Maybe Fabian goes in the 20s, and like Thomas and Franklin and Justice Thompson at UNC all go like 30 to 50 instead.
Yeah, Thompson will be interesting because he has like really no – I mean, that Virginia series he had where he looked like Byron Buxton, one scout told me.
Yeah.
But like he just doesn't have a track record playing like. But the guy I was going to ask you about, kind of the same vein, was Alex Benelis at Louisville. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what you had in your preseason list, but we had him, you know, like, I think he was 9th on our preseason list.
Okay.
And he was hitting 173 a month into the season. He's up to 259 now. He was striking out a lot. He has caught fire as of late. You know, they had their last series was canceled, their last conference series against Pittsburgh, but 6 homers in his last 8 games. But he's moved from third base to first base. He's not looking very good at first base, and people weren't sold on third base to begin with. Where do you think Alex Benelis goes today?
Yes. So I just saw him. I saw, I guess, what was his last actual series, right? Because Virginia was
Yeah. Right. I pulled up his stats. I'm like, why didn't he play? And the Pittsburgh series got canceled. Yeah.
I'm glad you asked because I think he's really interesting because he was playing first base. He's not very good at first base. He's not that athletic. He swung and missed at 5 straight fastballs to open that Virginia series against a lefty, so left on left. And then the 6th one was a missile. And he did it again the next night. And it's like, you can't walk away from that kind of, it was power. And there was some, it's like, it's not like his bat is slow, but that his timing was atrocious. And obviously left on left, it appears to be some kind of an issue for him. But if you look at his season on the whole, he's not actually striking out that much. It's that he's just not doing much when he puts the ball in play. It's like he puts it in the seats or he's hitting a weak ground ball somewhere. And that's a different profile to me than the group of guys we just talked about who are all like Fabian and Tom. Those guys are athletes. Benelis is a bat. And if he doesn't, hey, he's hitting 259 on the season. I don't have the conference stats in front of me. I'll take a see if I can find him in a sec. But like Del Castillo, you mentioned earlier, if Del Castillo is, a lot of people don't think he can catch. And even if you do think he stays there, he's not very good. You better hit. And these guys are not hitting like they're supposed to. And to me, that pushes you. That pushes you right out of the first round. Nobody is taking a bat first guy who didn't perform in the platform year. And back to your point, which I think is such a salient one, no summer. No one can say this guy was great on the Cape last summer.
Yeah, and his strikeout rate's about 21%, which isn't awful, but it's not light. You know, he is playing better in conference. It'll be interesting. We did our list. We kind of knocked him down to, I guess, what would be about the third round range. And I think he probably, I mean, again, we're not trying to line up where you get drafted, but I could see him moving up. Like, again, I think he's probably a second rounder, but there's just so many of these guys who came into the year as supposed to be top college bats.
Yeah.
And the crop as a whole has been really disappointing.
Last question for you. Is there a guy who you feel like you like more than people, isn't being talked about enough? You could call him a sleeper, just a guy who you think by the time we get to draft day, maybe he'll go a little bit higher, but for whatever reason, just isn't getting ranked as high. You could point to my own list if you want. Just isn't getting as much attention from the on the public side of things as you think he should be getting.
Well, there's two guys we moved into like the 20s on our list, and I don't have your list in front of me, so I'm not sure where you had them. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you a third name, but like Peyton Stovall. I'm agonizing over Peyton Stovall a little
bit. It's a tough one. Yeah,
coming into the year too. Keith, he was literally 101 on our 100. We snuck about like five like infielders who could really hit, high school guys, onto the end of the list. And I just ran out of room for him. And he was, less athletic than some of them. And, he's hard to rank anyway, because like you have some guys to tell you he might be the best hitter in the Midwest, college or high school. Mm-hmm. I had one scout who's done this for a long time and said best swing in his area since Todd Walker, who was the number 8 overall pick in the 94 draft, is probably the best hitter I ever saw in college baseball the 8 or 9 years I was on the beat for Baseball America. Mm-hmm. When he said that, I was like, whoa, like Todd Walker, it's pretty high standard. But at the same time, like there's people who even question a little bit whether Peyton Stovall can stay on the infield.
Right.
Like he might be more of a left fielder. So he's a tough one. But I think people, like his name's out there. Did you have him on your top 50? What did you do with him?
No, because of the position, right? Because he's a high school second baseman with kind of heavy feet.
And if he's a left fielder, like that's – how many high school left fielders do you see get taken who are 680 pounds?
How many high school second basemen do you see get taken, right?
Well, we don't he like might that not be a second baseman, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So now what if he's not even that? It's he would be on the 100, right? I only did 50.
Yeah.
Absolutely would be on the 100. And I think having him on – if he'd been on my 50, like there was a case to be made.
I was just like, it's funny because we moved him up even. And I told Jonathan, like, let's just bet on his bat. I've heard too much good about his bat. We'll bet on his bat. How about Will Taylor? Do you have Will Taylor on your list?
He was almost exact. You had him 26. I had him within 2 of that on my own list too.
It's funny because coming into the year, so we get a lot of feedback like you do on our list. So before the season, we did the top 100. I think we initially had him like around 40, and we got feedback, oh, it's too high, not sure how much impact there is in the bat. So we moved him down to like 62 or something. And this guy fascinates me, Keith. I wrote that, baseball might be his third best sport. He might go in the first round. He's a quarterback who, led his team to the state title, South Carolina 5A state title, 32 touchdowns. He's supposed to play slot receiver at Clemson. Dabo Swinney keeps comparing him to Hunter Renfrow. So you have that. He's won. I haven't followed up. I don't know when the state wrestling championships are this year, but he was a state champion, 152 pounds as a sophomore, 160 as a junior. It's well above average speed. He's not as raw as the typical multi-sport guy is, and he's stronger. I mean, he's strong anyway because he's a wrestler, but he's stronger this spring. He's impacting the ball more. So I really like Will Taylor. So then I guess the guy who would be my sleeper, we've moved him up. Like he's 51 on our list again, I think, because I like him. So I don't know if that really makes you a sleeper if you're 51 on our list. Well, you know what? I'll give you two names.
Sure.
I'll give you one high school, one college. Noah Miller, who's Owen Miller's little brother. He's one of those sweet swinging middle infielders that we did get on our preseason top 100. And I think he can play shortstop. I think he's got a chance to play shortstop.
It seems like it.
Next level. So I feel like he's a little, underrated just because I do think he's one of the better high school bats in the country. Not that you're going to draft off demographics, but, you know, Wisconsin's done a pretty good job producing players in recent years. And he's another one. I think he's got, you know, 15 homer power, maybe more than that. He's a switch hitter, high baseball IQ. So it's not like unbelievable physical tools, but it's pretty good tools. And he can really hit. And he can really play. So I like him. And did you have him on your 50?
I did. He was on my 50.
Like okay, so he's not underrated. I'm trying to figure out. And then the other guy, and I think you had this guy on your list. Yeah, what's crazy is one of the best areas of talent in this year's draft, especially if you go college hitters, is second baseman, which is just goofy.
Yes.
Like there's, I can list like 8 or 10 college second basemen. I have the country.
I'm actually, well, there's so many. I'm wondering, I have two guesses which guy. Well,
I know, I do the Midwest and the Southeast minus Florida. Okay. And I know you have Tyler Black and Connor Norby on your list. Those are the two guys. But those aren't the two guys.
Okay, who you got? Yeah.
You Peyton Wilson at Alabama.
Yes. Whose brother listeners may know because it was Ross Wilson, right? From, what was the TV show? Two A Days?
Yes, I think so. Like, I think they had the show about the high school football team in Alabama.
Yes. Yep.
But it was his oldest brother, John Parker, who actually set records at Alabama as a quarterback. Although I think Ross was on the show as a quarterback.
Yeah.
And then he went and he shares the freshman home run record at Alabama still with Jeremy Brown of Moneyball fame with 15. And so anyway, Parker is like super, I mean, not Parker, Peyton is super intriguing. He's eligible as a COVID freshman because he's a 21-year-old sophomore. So he was a part-time player last year, catcher and center fielder, moved to second base this year, and he's a switch hitter. We've got him as a 65 runner, 65 arm. He can hit. He's got some sneaky power. He's one of those guys who's a little, you know, 5'9". He's aggressive, but he barrels the ball. And I think you could play him a bunch. Like, I'm kind of curious, and I don't know the answer. Like, if he's a 65 runner with a 65 arm, like, why isn't he playing shortstop for Alabama? Or why wouldn't they consider that? Like, it seems like you have the quickness and arm strength. But, like, he legitimately has a chance to catch, although I think that would beat up his tools some. But he could play – I mean, how many guys are there where you're talking, this guy could be a catcher, a second baseman, or a center fielder? He's like the – kind of like the Harry Ford, who's a high school catcher in Georgia, as you know, of the college ranks. But he's just super intriguing. And it's like, for whatever reason, like I think Ryan Bliss, who's at arch rival Auburn, who's a shortstop who probably will move to second base in pro ball. Like, it seems like Ryan Bliss is more famous, but I actually like Peyton Wilson a little bit more as a prospect. So I'll go with Peyton Wilson.
Good choice. My guest today has been the great Jim Callis. You can find his work in MLB Pipeline. You can find him on Twitter at Jim Callis, CallisMLB. Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
No, that was fun, Keith. I wonder if we had nothing else to do and no time limit, how long we could go talking about the draft.
Oh, probably a couple hours.
At least.
Yes. And I would continue to learn things.
Well, we talked to, you know, we kind of talked to a lot of the same people and I think approaches in a similar fashion, but still it's always interesting getting different perspectives on what people are hearing. I would put the over under. I bet we could go at least 3 hours talking draft.
Yeah. Probably. That's all for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, everyone. Wear your masks and go get that vaccine.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.